Welcome to the interoperability panel here. We're going to talk about the challenges of building an interoperable integration stack and interoperability in general. How do we get certain platforms from various vendors to work together as a cohesive whole? I'd like to introduce Raghu from TIBCO.
Hello.
Joe from Sun Microsystems.
Hello.
And Greg Lee.
Greg Lee. And
Jonathan Marsh from WSO2.
Why don't we first tell us a little bit about our roles and responsibilities.
Sure. My name is Raghu Thyagarajan. I head up product management and strategy at TIBCO Software. And TIBCO is a middleware integration vendor that works with both the Java and .NET technologies.
Thank you.
My name is Gerald Bichelt. I work for Sun Microsystems. I work in the CTO's office, which is advanced research and development. And our group has been working with Microsoft since the early days of the Sun and Microsoft Alliance, particularly focusing on web services, identity, web services, and similar technologies.
Great. My name is Greg Leek, and I work in the Connected Systems Division at Microsoft. And that's the group that's responsible for the server side parts of .NET and the .NET framework, as well as BizTalk server.
And I'm Jonathan Marsh. I work at WSO2. We're an open source vendor. We provide an SOA middleware platform that's based on the Apache open source projects, and we provide services and support around that. My role there is director of architecture for the Mashup technology.
And my name is Chris Haddad, and I'm with Burton Group, where I run the application platform and data management strategy teams. So interoperability is a buzzword that's often bandied around, and everyone wants to say that they play well in the sandbox. But we know that there's a continuum of effort that needs to be performed in order to make that happen. I hear that this week you've been working on a demonstration where you show how each of your respective stacks are interoperable. Can you tell us a little bit about the challenges and success stories that you've had this week?
Sure, so just to recap what that sample application is, it's actually published on MSDN so folks can download it, and other components are published on other vendor sites like WSO2, and we're doing some work with Sun around federated security and the Sun Metro service that will add to it. And it's a sample app that ostensibly from the Microsoft technology stack is built on Windows Communication Foundation as a service-oriented app, and we're using it as an app to demonstrate how to tie together other platforms where you can swap out components or services that are written on the Microsoft stack and seamlessly plug in elements written on Sun stack, on the WSO2 stack, maybe integrating with ESB from TIBCO. And it's really something we plan to continue to enhance and build out to show how you can use a substrate layer to around web services to get this interop. But also I think there's opportunity to add higher levels of abstraction and show how we can integrate via BizTalk and some of the adapters with TIBCO and other technologies to build in workflow. So it's kind of a living, growing thing that we hope that we'll continue to build on.
And Jonathan, was this just all plug and pray?
Actually, it worked very well. The app is called StockTrader, and it consists of three parts, three tiers, a kind of client user interface, then there's a business process, and then an order processing service, and they all communicated through web services that were all secured with WS Security and other advanced web service protocols. And in the demo that we did in the keynote this morning, we took a client that was written in PHP using the WSO2 web services framework for PHP, which in turn is based on the Apache 2C implementation, and we're able to seamlessly interoperate with the .NET business service, and then later on we swapped in a Java-based order processing service on the back end, which was based on the WSO2 web services application server, which again is an Apache stack, but it's based on the Java language. And I think what was interesting about the demo was actually that we didn't have to plug and pray. The wire level interoperability on both just communicating with web services and also securing those web services between all those various platforms really worked pretty much out of the box. The issues we had weren't at the wire level. It was looking at the development environments and getting the certificates installed on each side so that they would work and configuring things. So I think we still have work to do to make sure that developer experience in configuring these services is as smooth as possible, but at least we're up there and not do these things really interoperate at the wire level. That was really quite seamless.
In fact, they spent, I think you and Sammy saw, were in the lab for about 12 hours, and we had built all the three layers and had them talking and working together. So not a big effort whatsoever, and that's over the WS Star, one of the WS Star standards, to allow full message level protection and encryption using digital certificates and X509 certs. So that went well, and the thing that we're going to do with SunNext is extend that solution to use some of the integration that we have with our card space solution.
And yeah, exactly.
I'll let Gerald talk a little bit about that.
Exactly. We'll actually use the secure token service that we built into the Metro stack that we have on the Sun Java side. And it will allow the client to obtain a token for accessing the various web services from a secure token server using WS Trust, and then forwarding that token back to the services that can consume and verify that token. And that is something that we're working on right now, and it's looking like it's like a going through a breeze. It's again the configuration of the various certificates and the other components of the architecture that are really important to get to. And there's a little bit of impedance mismatch every now and then how some other platforms do it versus our platform, et cetera. But it's actually going pretty quickly and pretty easily.
Yeah, and the key thing here, again, it's all going to get published up on MSDN as samples so that people can see how, like from a WCF perspective it looks, as well as from the Java perspective. And of course, the cool thing about this whole scenario is we've got multiple front ends now written on multiple different platform stacks, and any one of them could use this as a solution to obtain the secure token that then gets authenticated by the back end service layer. So the PHP client, well, I imagine you guys could add that ability in as well.
We actually have an identity solution that implements all of these protocols as well, and so we look forward just to hooking that up and having it all work.
That'll be really interesting to see, absolutely. And I should add that we just started working on that about 2 hours ago, and we'll probably have that done by tomorrow for another presentation at the BizTalk server booth.
I think another key part about this plug and play rather than plug and pray is the breadth of interoperability that we were showing here. I mean, between Microsoft and WSO2 and the Apache brand, just the interoperability here spans a huge number of developers. We have the whole .NET community and all of the different languages and development tools built on top of the CLR. We showed our Java solution. Of course, Sun also has great Java support, so there really isn't too much question about Java and to CLR playing together. But then we also showed languages in unmanaged code, which was our PHP application. And since that's based on a C implementation, that same stack is available for embedded devices and mobile devices, appliances, C, C++, and other languages like PHP, Perl, and so forth. So we're adding more and more languages. So the breadth here of interoperating across the board is really starting to become impressive, and I think a lot of the developers in the IT community are really going to appreciate that.
Well, so there's some breadth here, and it doesn't sound like you need to be a rocket scientist to make this work, where in the past it took a lot of effort to configure the key stores across the various consumers and providers, make sure that you set the correct cipher algorithm. I'm thinking about when the OASIS security profile just came out, and none of the products actually had standardized on implementing that specification. So where do you see us going from a standards body perspective? Is there more needs to profile the exchanges at the wire levels, or do you see us moving up the stack?
I would definitely say that we're starting to move up the stack. I mean, in the early stages of web services, we were starting to define and starting to get interoperability for the real core protocols that are actually working quite well today, like, for instance, SOAP or WS Security, MTOM, et cetera, et cetera. Most of those, as far as I can see, are not only standardized by organizations like, for instance, OASIS, but are also showing great interoperability in regular plug fests and other events. So we're pretty good there. What I think is necessary, that anything that builds on top of it, like for instance identity web services, will require more profiling potential, will require more and more intensive work in terms of plug fests or other standardization and testing opportunities. And there are many of them out there. OASIS is definitely one of the venues where a lot of that work is happening. There have been other more specialized and smaller groups that are doing that, like, for instance, OSIS, which is the open source identity selector group, where a lot of people are participating as well. And I think we will be seeing, going down the road for the next 12 to 24 months, we'll be seeing more of that activity also spanning across other technologies, like reliable messaging, like transactions or coordination, et cetera.
And you bring up the point of moving up the stack, and you know, I'll ask my esteemed colleague here from TIBCO to talk a little bit about the work that you've done with with your ESB solution and Windows Communication Foundation, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting stuff. So we've had, TIBCO's been in the messaging business for a while. And obviously, when you look at standards like Java, the emphasis on messaging was really around the programming model, right? It was how these abstractions showed up to the developer. While with web services, what's happening is the programming model is much more neutral. It has to be transport agnostic. And so what's happening is we have a lot of large customers who already built large complex systems running on our EMS messaging product. And for instance, Allstate Insurance. And they have also embraced WCF as a programming model for the SOA as part of the architecture, along with Java. So what they wanted to do was have one messaging backbone that could actually be externalized both to the WCF world and to the Java world. So what we have done is use WCF's extensions capability to put in a channel which is basically leveraging TIBCO EMS under the covers. Now what's happened is we pushed the messaging as a core part of the infrastructure, but it's no longer visible to the SOA application developer. And it provides basically seamless interoperability both within the WCF framework to a reliable, secure, transactional messaging system, as well to Java and other endpoints that those customers have built up.
So if we've decoupled the message wire protocol from the program and experience, does it really matter if we're running over JMS or MQ or the WS star specifications?
I would argue it matters quite a bit, simply because if you stick to protocols that are specific to a particular domain or a particular vendor, you'll have a very hard time integrating those different islands of systems that are to be found within an enterprise or even outside the enterprise that you're trying to connect to. So if you want to connect all those different kinds of services together, you'd have to restart the whole process that we're going through right now with web services, and make sure that you get a high fidelity of interoperability between those proprietary systems.
But at the same time, I mean, these are also important technologies that are widely deployed, JMS, MQ, there's many on the .NET side. So, you know, from a Microsoft standpoint, a great strategy, I think, is that at the substrate level, we rely on Windows Communication Foundation, or communication technology, for the web service support, but we can abstract up the chain, for instance, with the BizTalk adapter for WCF, such that you can have components that wrap elements that might be using MQ or JMS on the Java side within a service domain, code that's already deployed, but then that becomes interoperable over web services with this facade layer that you can build out to then reach out to these other service domains over the web service standards.
So I would interject a little note of caution there, too. I mean, today we have good interoperability, but mostly I think a good practice that I would give to developers is stay pretty close to the web service technologies in your programming environment. For new projects. I mean, if you have some legacy thing you need to expose, certainly get it out as web services. But the more abstractions you build on and complicated programming environments that get you farther and farther away, the more opportunity is for those abstractions not to actually result in a very nice wire level experience. That can make it harder to interoperate at the wire level. So, for instance, our products really encourage you to program to a web service programming model instead of something.
And that's a very important point. I completely agree. But another corollary point is that this is not just about interoperating over with services in the cloud or across your business partner. This is really fundamentally important even for service-oriented architectures deployed within the intranet, because enterprises just have heterogeneous mixed environments. So it's not just about going out over the internet for this interoperability.
So if I'm understanding what you're saying here is if you're doing service-oriented architecture style development, if you're interacting across a heterogeneous set of consumers,
or
you should
be
using web services?
Absolutely. As as the foundational protocol for being able to say, I'm going to build a service in one platform, but tomorrow I may need to plug it into another platform.
Right, but isn't web services a little too complex and maybe not ready for prime time here? I mean, can we? Is it ready for all types of mission critical situations that the business might require?
I'll take a quick stab at that. Yeah, I think as the conversation started out, web services focused on wire interoperability first. Right? But if you look at the evolution of the standards, they focused on things that make web services more enterprise ready. And that was a nice idea behind standardizing the wire protocol as opposed to something like a core bar. Right? Getting that first and then being able to extend to adding security, extend to adding transactions. Now when we say are web services ready for prime time, that's an interesting question because the question is it one platform in the organization? Within a Microsoft WCF world, absolutely. I think WCF has added a lot of capabilities in the platform. As you start to get to heterogeneous world, the question becomes, do the qualities of service that one platform provide actually bridge across the qualities of services provided by another platform? And are web services able to capture those qualities of service dependencies? And I think WSRM, WS Security, WS Transactions are all standards that have been maturing over the last two to three years. Been significant work done over there. Are they completely ready for implementation? I'm not sure yet, but are they pretty close? Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure some of the other vendors will have some thoughts on that as well.
I would largely agree with that, absolutely. One thing, though, that I would still want to throw into this discussion here as well is that you definitely will have to take a close look at the actual problem at hand. If you're running in a situation, an enterprise-y situation, where you need very high fidelity web services, where reliable messaging and transaction, et cetera, are going to be important down the road, then yes, absolutely, SOAP-based web services are the answer to that question. If on the other side you run into a situation or want to try to solve a problem where you have many millions of connects and really don't need to secure those kind of transactions in any way, shape, or form because you're looking up ISBN numbers at a service or something like that, then it might be worthwhile to also consider other alternatives, like, for instance, RESTful web services as well. But again, it really depends on the kind of situation that you're in, and you really got to figure out what kind of a problem you're trying to solve before you throw any kind of technology at it.
So when we're talking about quality of service, that's also sometimes linked to policy definitions. Are we at a point where far enough where we are able to describe the quality of service for particular service endpoints?
I'll take that. I think we're just on the cusp of really having great policy-driven communications. I think most of the major vendors support the WS policy spec very well, and specific policies like the most complicated policy language or flavor that I know of is the security policy. And that seems to be supported really pretty well across most of the major vendors, as you know, demonstrated by things like the info card specs working. And there's a lot of security
going on. There's a lot of negotiation going on. There's a lot of policy being applied, and you can just plug it and it works.
Yeah, so I think we still have to do a little more work on some of the additional policy statements, things like reliable. I know we have some issues with our support for the policies for reliable messaging. They're very simple policies, but we just really have to hook those up comprehensively through the entire development experience and make those a little more seamless. And so I believe we're getting there pretty quickly, and I'm really glad to see the most complicated one, security policy, really starting to work. And I think it's a good proof of concept that the whole policy-driven framework will be online for most people to use probably in the next 12 months.
I'll add a little bit to that as well. Some of these interoperability implementations can actually be built because of the web services architecture outside of the platform as well. Right? So what we've got is the platform hosts services and provides certain qualities of service that are native to it because there are certain strong implementations of security or transactions in specific platforms. And you'll always have that difference or impedance difference in the industry. What you can start to see is when you start to look at policy implementations, they can actually be done as interceptors in the glue that connects these services as well, right? And when you start to build an architecture like that, you can actually normalize some of the behavior across platforms. At least identify capabilities based on each platform and try to handshake and provide a basic level of standardization across these things. So not all of this is going to be WS standards necessarily. Some of it is going to be implementation standards as well.
As well as architectural design patterns. Correct. So an interceptor pattern or the concept of service mediation, where we're trying to loosely couple systems by putting an intermediary node that will intercept the message and either perform protocol bridging
or routing,
and the like, or transformations of the data format. Do you feel that we're moving towards a good definition of those terms, and maybe like the service component architecture provides a interoperable specification that we can build off of when we're creating mediation logic?
Well, I'll make a more controversial statement here. I don't think the SCA is really going to help interoperability because, again, it's another abstraction that encompasses not only the web services programming model, but it also encompasses essentially the legacy that they're trying to protect, which is the J2EE. And it's a single framework. So what is the interoperability story on the wire in SCA? Well, it's web services. So there really isn't any gain in interoperability that I see from using SCA.
Are we trying to abstract away policies and the actual composition model from the in the bits programming language or the wire protocol itself?
Yeah, but I think there's a lot we can do actually sticking closer to the actual policies that we have there. I mean, if I come up to somebody's service, I want to consume it, the standard way that they communicate those policies to me is through a WS policy document or maybe some other metadata like WSDL. So that's actually sufficient for me to figure out how to communicate and secure and have the right qualities of service with that vendor. And so adding more abstractions on that, we can have a lot of cool tooling around that. But I don't think we need to have a lot more kind of runtime abstractions in play in order to get interoperability there.
We're pretty closely engaged in SCA on the Java front. And so I can kind of, the value I see in SCA is it's a mechanism for building, I guess, Java derivative applications, service-oriented applications, right? And so to the broader question of is it an interoperability standard outside of Java to the WCF role, no. But within the Java world, there are needs to compose applications out of services. And when you're trying to define, let's call it a system or a subsystem, and the overall application is going to span one of those subsystems you create and bind it to a WCF subsystem or a system in a typical large enterprise. And so SCA has tried to define the problem, but its scope is within Java and whatever the implementation, mediation, orchestration types that are Java derivatives, that you can actually set those wire level qualities of service, externalize them outside. It provides a programming model. But again, it's one programming model for, I believe, the Java camp at this point.
It started out there, but it doesn't necessarily have to be exclusive to that. When we talk about bindings to C services, you're actually raising above the implementation level. And if we're looking to raise above the stack, it's very interesting to think, you know, what is the way we should compose services to what is going to be that next generation declarative language that we use to actually compose and orchestrate services? And am I going to be actually locked into Microsoft BizTalk or Active Matrix?
Well, I think that's an important point. I mean, we see on the web today the incredible wealth of languages that have sprung up and continue to grow. And I think the important thing is that wire level interop and let that competition happen, or let the tool be chosen for the right job that fits, and not say we're going to dictate it at that level, you shall program services in this language or that language. We need to have that wire level interoperability so you know that whatever tooling you choose, and it should make a good tooling, will make building these services easy, right? And that's where some of the maturity still has to come into play across all of our tools, I believe. But the good tools will build it based on these wire level formats, so you know you can plug into a service built in a completely different set of tooling running on a different operating system on a different development platform. I mean, that's, I think, where we want to go from a Microsoft standpoint.
It can really be a black box. Yeah. You know, I don't care what you used in order to deliver this service. You've given me the metadata. Mm-hmm. I can read what the policies and how I connected the service are, and I can interact with it. And you should be able to take your your entire system and re-architect it and switch platforms and languages and operating systems and everything. As long as that metadata stays the same, I should still be able to contact you.
Let's talk a little bit more about the metadata descriptions of services. Mm-hmm. There's a certain camp of individuals that believe that we don't need to describe service interfaces at all. Where does that fit? Do we actually need WSDL and WSDL 2.0 and policy definitions or not?
Well, so I think the camp that you're referring to is they're called the REST camp, which is representational state transfer. And they're essentially saying, we can do a lot with services just with XML or other media types that are defined on the web and HTTP. We have the four verbs in HTTP. That should be sufficient. We have hyperlinks, so who needs a description format? If I go and I get a page on the web, I don't have to get a description for what that page is. I get the page and I look through it for links. That helps me discover dynamically what's going on with the application. Well, I think there that works to in some situations, and it's an appealing kind of mental model for designing your application, but there are a lot of practical benefits you get out of a description language, especially when you get into more advanced protocols. I mean, is this, do I need to have a security enabled in order to talk with this service? Well, in a REST world, you might try and access the service and it says, you're not authorized. Okay, now I have to go back and try again. So if I have to do that with every interaction to discover if it's secured, if I have access, you know, what the qualities of service are, there's a lot of network traffic there in order to dynamically negotiate things. And today it's a lot easier for us to take a description of what's going on and know ahead of time whether or not we can talk to the service and configure ourselves to make sure with the WSStar protocols we have a lot of options to kind of custom design the protocol that we need for this particular task. And description artifacts really help us not only get that communication going, but it also helps communicate a little bit more of the programming model that the original author was thinking of. You know, he was thinking of the service he offers in terms of, you know, these four operations. There's the list the quotes that are on your stock exchange and place a trade and, you know, get me a quote for this particular stock and, you know, something else. So you get a model, a mental model out of that description that may be exactly what you like as a consumer of that service if you want to adopt that same mental model. You don't have to adopt the same mental model, but at least you've communicated that. So both of those things, being able to communicate on the wire and configure things automatically and being able to communicate a little bit of your developer model are both valuable artifacts that we get from the description artifacts, and we make a lot of use of them in our product to make the developer's life easier. Just, hey, you have a service you want to consume? Show me where the metadata is, and we'll see what we can do to configure ourselves automatically to talk with that and to build you some programming artifacts that you can easily interact with.
And I think both have a role to play. From a Microsoft standpoint, a lot of people don't know that WCF with .NET 3.5 has now enabled RESTful services to be built and consumed. So we have a whole model. Windows Communication Foundation moves beyond just WSStar. However, for enterprise interactions that require security, transactions, reliable messaging, you know, the service-to-service interactions and the enterprise level, that's going to be WSStar. Otherwise, you're just left with trying to build the same types of standards into that, and then it becomes a second and unnecessary effort. For UI to service interactions, the RESTful stuff is very interesting, and WCF supports it very well now.
I would like to add a little bit to that. Sun also, we also support obviously the WSStar specs, and in a very similar way, we're also supporting now RESTful APIs as well. And one of the things we found is that if you have a metadata description language, or if you have lots of metadata, tooling becomes much easier. So if you take a look at WSDL, mm-hmm. WSDL is fantastically suited for modeling, for tooling, for enabling your development tools to actually take a lot of work away from the developer and make it easier. Similarly, other description languages, like for instance, what parts of our development community have been taking a close look at in form of WSDL, do the same thing for a RESTful kind of environment. But I would also say that while some features are much harder to re-implement in a RESTful kind of way, like for instance secure conversation or transactional kinds of things. Other things like identity or to some extent even security can be modeled in a RESTful way that is very meaningful and that also allows transactions in a secure and yet identity-laden way. And it, again, I would reiterate that it really depends on the kind of problem you're trying to solve. Mm-hmm. If it really requires a lot of features, if it requires a lot of tooling, then WSR might be the answer. If it is of a different kind of a problem, then you might want to consider other options as well.
Switching gears here, thinking about, there's this hot topic today called virtualization. And I hear it start to be applied to services, service virtualization. What does that mean to you, Raju? Okay. And how does that intersect with interoperability? Do we need interoperability if everything's virtualized, or does interoperability have to happen first before we can get virtualization, and where are we in that continuum?
Okay. You opened up a pretty broad term, so yeah, I'll take a minute to kind of give you a typical view of virtualization. And how it ties back to interoperability. I think if you look at the basic notion of virtualization, it's location and transport abstraction. That's kind of one of the tenets of SOA. And that's good. But if you look at service virtualization, it's starting to, especially if you take a platform view of SOA for a moment and say you want to build and deploy services, and then services are no longer these things that you put wrappers on, and that you somehow have a very large grain connection, and you forget about where they're deployed and how they scale. But the services are actually part of an application, and that application has certain qualities of service, and it needs to scale and perform at a certain relative rate. Now, if you look at the trends in what's happening, those service implementation types can be pretty diverse. You could have Java services, you could have Ruby services, they could be people-based services, WCF services, etc. Now, how do you actually virtualize the implementation of these services, and how do you virtualize the deployment in terms of scalability, right? Can you actually scale up on demand these services? And these are some things that I think Microsoft is working pretty hard on, TIBCO is working pretty hard on, which is how do you actually do things that are driven by the SaaS model or on-demand model, but now start to apply to SOA as it is the new application delivery platform style of choice. Right? How do you start to virtualize and scale across different service implementation types and be able to scale and manage resources to guarantee qualities of service to the consumers of those services themselves? Now, in terms of interoperability, what does it mean? I think it means the ability, your platform should have the ability to be able to deploy diverse sorts of services, right? Because it's no longer one monolithic application platform. It's a fairly heterogeneous platform. I think WCF shows that in terms of the number of types that it hosts. I think SCA on the Java front is trying to do something similar, at least from a design abstraction perspective. But to us, the service virtualization goes into deployment as well, ability to actually deploy and manage diverse sorts of services.
And so there's an announcement today about the configuration service. How does that relate to interoperability?
Well, that's interesting. It's something that I worked on, and it's really, you know, a proof of concept, if you will, but it's also shared libraries that are part of this download if you go up to the MSDN StockTrader site. And it's something that I just built because I found issues when we went to a distributed service environment around management and understanding what was running where and configuring things that were connected into a composite application, but having to configure them independently, even though I was a super admin. You know, I owned all these bits. And yeah, I decided to partition it as a service-oriented application. I felt like I had the need to have some sort of integrated console where I could configure and see the whole composite view of this application. So I went off and built something, and you ask, well, how does it relate to interoperability? Well, it's based on WCF. It's just a web service, a configuration service. Think of it as a management agent that lives inside your host process, and it could be implemented in Java, it could be implemented in PHP, because it's just a web service. And it's also, because of the way it works, it allows you to easily connect up to and view connections to Java and PHP services. I didn't really show it in the demo here on stage because we only had 6 minutes in the keynote, but you can download it and check it out. And it's, you know, proof of concept, but stuff that we're thinking more deeply about in the product team around our Oslo timeframe for infrastructure stuff that we should just have baked into the framework in that timeframe.
Any other comments about, you know, where we're going with interoperability? You know, is it a done deal, or are there new horizons that we need to tackle, and Is there a call to action?
Oh, it's definitely
here?
Not a done deal. I think customers need to demand interop as a feature, and we've got a long ways to go. I don't think anybody would say, oh, it's a done deal. I mean, that would be naive on all of our parts to even suggest that. But I think, you know, just showing by the folks that we have here and the broad industry support of a variety of standards, including the WS Star standpoint, we've come a long way, and we just need to continue driving forward. And that's going to be largely based on customer demand, saying you have to have this level of interoperability. We have to have these standards, and look at it as a demanded feature of the product. So.
And I think the relationship between Sun and Microsoft is a particularly good example of how customer demand can actually bring you to adversaries at some time much closer together and allow our developers to talk to your developers at pretty much any given moment, and through joint efforts, through joint marketing, but even more importantly through joint development efforts, deliver a stack or two stacks in this context that have a very, very high level of interoperability. And that goes out to pretty much all the other
to the open source community.
Open source
community,
yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's that is driven by customers saying, no, we don't want to be we don't want to have to run three or four different types of applications that are that we can only communicate between by shuffling tapes or disks back and forth.
Or hiring, you know, $500 million worth of consultants to build a custom one-off solution, or $25 million worth of, you know, of integration software where we can do it at a nice level with the product sets that are available in the market, widely deployed, like the TIBCO ESB solution, BizTalk server, et cetera.
One thing I'd say our customers are telling us that we haven't quite looked at from a standardization perspective yet. We've looked at WS policy, but service level agreements are probably going to be one of the frontier as you look at SOA becoming more. Initially, SOA has been looked at as a cheap way to do integration, right? It's been, let's wrapper everything. It's a standards-based service now tied together using less expensive technology. And that's perfectly fine. It's an appropriate use. But now people are starting to look at finer-grained SOA in terms of application construction initiatives. When you start to do that, now you're suddenly building, again, a distributed system, like one of the previous generations. But now, when you're starting to take a monolithic application and spreading it out, you no longer have assurances around being able to deliver qualities of service to your end consumers. So we're starting to see more and more the ability for these client and consumer and provider services, which of course, again, consumers of other services, having to set up some SLAs internally. And so as of now, there isn't significant emphasis on the standardization part of it, because we're really focused on wire interoperability and working out the security parts and transaction parts. But I think that's probably one of the areas where you'll see more effort.
Right. Moving up the stack beyond wire level interoperability to interoperability of the service level agreements, what are the policies that you're going to apply to the interaction, whether it's how reliable
common
it will
schema.
Be.
Defining common schema for these things.
As well as maybe even the programming model. How can we actually get a programming model that will cross different solution platforms and, you know, raise us up from being locked into a particular language, which is, you know, a foundation that the Microsoft CLR provides you with?
Yeah, so hopefully, you know, we won't have too many more of these panels on interoperability at the wire level. I think, you know, the end is in sight on this. And it's rapidly becoming just plumbing. When we did the StockTrader project together, that wire level stuff, we weren't sniffing messages anymore. Even though they're secured and encrypted and all that, we weren't looking at any of that stuff. That's just becoming plumbing, and pretty soon we'll see reliability and transactions and all that just be plumbing, and we will be up the stack, you know, to the policy-based stuff. Even the policy stuff today is really still describing how the protocol works, and with the SLAs and getting more up into the human semantics, you know. When I use this service, what does that mean kind of contractually and legally and morally, you know, between our two parties? And this is a rich area that we're going to be exploring for years.
Excellent.
Yeah, this area actually, speaking not necessarily from the SLA angle, but from the identity angle right now, actually gets a lot more interesting because you get you do not necessarily get away from the technology, but you add in a lot of features or a lot of aspects that are really business driven, or even more so regulatory driven, or just socially driven. Because in the identity world, you start to think about, what is trust? Why do I trust somebody, and how do I trust somebody? and how do I really know somebody? And if you start to think about those kind of problems and try how to map them down to technology, the wire level, it just has to work.
And when we're thinking about reputation, trust, identity, does WS Star go far enough? Do you need? Would you look towards the Liberty specifications or even something more basic such as OWL and different ontology-based languages?
Ontologies might be very interesting, but what I currently like about the Liberty specifications that are out there is that we have something, again, defined on a wire level that is quite interoperable across a wide variety of vendors and products. And what we have been starting to do within the Liberty framework is to open it up to outside third parties that do not necessarily want to be associated with. And one of those efforts are the special interest group, one of them being web services harmonization. So we are inviting essentially anybody who wants to join in to talk about web services harmonization in the identity world, that to allow better interoperability.
So we're moving beyond interoperability to harmonization?
I mean, absolutely.
It sounds like we're starting to be a rock band or something. Yeah, maybe, Greg, you can talk to where there's overlap and contention between maybe Liberty and WS Star and where Microsoft is reconciling or harmonizing that.
Well, we just, you know, our philosophy is listen to our customer demands and make sure that we're building technology that fundamentally interoperates, work with our partners in the vendor community and our competitors in the vendor community. And, you know, beyond that, we see what gets thrown into the mix and we see where things evolve, but we're totally focused on interoperability, as is
right.
Sun.
Absolutely.
And often these standards start out as different vendors have different ideas about what those implementations should look like. And ultimately, we get down to a standards organization where we work out those differences, we all make compromises, and we come up with something that allows us to get that out and meet the customer demand. So that's really the focus here, I think.
And this is really what is happening right now. If you actually take a look at what has been happened relative to Liberty and the WStar specs, Liberty is using W Security today. It is using WS Addressing today. And some of those things are actually in a result of talking closer with Microsoft and making sure that we are agreeing on the same types of wire level protocols. And this is the harmonization part. We have had in the past sometimes our own types of solutions. Microsoft had other ideas. Microsoft and their partners had other ideas of how to solve a particular problem. And at the end, customers and the markets tend to pick those kind of solutions that are best fitted to the particular problem at hand. And we as vendors sit together and make sure that those kind of solutions then ultimately will make it into our products and into the standards.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. It's been an excellent discussion.